So a very warm welcome to everyone, and I hope you can hear me all right. Everything's flowing in well from this side. So it's really lovely to be coming back into the online Dharma Hall space together, and looking forward to this session together that we can enjoy and appreciate our possibilities for practice. And as many of you have already begun, feel free to say hello in the chat and welcome each other. And yeah, understand that if you come in after the a welcome has been written, then you may not get to see it, but there's lots of welcomings there. And yeah, really feel invited to add your own if you wish, mentioning where you are, how you are. Anything you'd like to share there? It's a nice way of establishing our sense of community, and also, you know, awakening us to actually how spread out and potentially diverse our locations are as we come together. And I'd really like to, you know, kind of extend that welcoming also to include you to be here in whatever way feels right for you. So, you know, it's lovely that some of us have the videos on and we can kind of see each other. But it's also completely fine, you know, to have your video off. You know, it's if it's helpful to see each other and to look at each other, and particularly at the beginning, establishing that sense of togetherness, that sense of sangha, sense of community can be really useful. But also, you know, it's kind of primarily a audio event, I suppose, in terms of input and output. And I did quickly mute everybody at the beginning, so because there was something, sounded like we were picking up a conversation or something just before we went live. But from this point, really feel free to unmute yourself and be unmuted for the remainder of the session. I'm really happy to be able to, you know, hear you and feel you in that way, pick up your sense of being. It doesn't have to be a, you know, perfect silence type of space. So you're invited to unmute yourself if you feel that your environment is tolerant of that. And the other thing is, don't feel you need to be staring at a screen. As I said, it's going to be mostly a visual happening. If it's helpful to be able to see each other, then feel free to be looking in at the screen. But oftentimes, actually, what's more relaxing and therefore perhaps more meditative and more gathering and more enjoyable is maybe like to look out of a window, or look at a painting, or look at a flower, or whatever it is that you maybe have in your space. And while all of this is happening, we can listen well, but also kind of nourish the sense doors that are also here, and so that we can, oh, I'm not just fully absorbed in that physical sense of the visual world. But it's up to each of us to find our way, find what's helpful. It's all about. And one more point just before we jump in, something I find really beneficial and helpful, and something that I really actually enjoy about these sessions, is just inviting you to share a little bit of what it is that's led you to devote this time to practice together. What's led you to step into this space? Whether it's something you're looking to receive from it, or looking to give to this, to the world, to, you know, why have you taken this bit of time out of your life to expose yourself to Dharma teachings, to expose yourself to community, to give yourself to meditation, the cultivation of beautiful qualities. Yeah, so Is there a particular beautiful quality that it is you'd like to cultivate at this time? Is there something in the world that you feel you want to dedicate this time towards? And if there is something, is some quality, something that you'd like to see more of, something that you feel you want to dedicate yourself towards, really feel free to pop that into the chat. In a sense, yeah, what is it you want to see more of? And I'll just repeat a few of those as they flow through. Yeah, and we also have hope. The wish to experience some peace. That's shared by some others, and quality of wanting to cultivate the beautiful. And something we can notice both in, tuning into our own intentions and also bringing that kind of front of being, front of mind, front of heart. Does that do something for us? Just that sense of that? Or also hearing of others' intentions? I feel for me it's like it really tunes me into that in the way that, someone might share a poem or a piece of art of something and it brings me into that space. To even think about the clarity of thought, clarity of heart. Encourages me just to pause into that, step into that in a way. Well, that appreciation of simple moments of being more present. And whatever intentions have kind of come alive for us that we're seeing coming in and feeling arising, this intention to stop, to listen and cultivate joy. For example. So, whether it was an intention that came to us or an intention from others that's touched us, let's bring that into a meditation together. So, think for yourself, what's actually going to be the best posture for you to cultivate that quality? Oftentimes, we might default to sitting is meditation, and it might be more standing or reclining, walking around. It's going to better fulfill that. If it would, do we have what it takes to do that, to support it in the best possible way? Okay, and so we'll take half an hour. I'll drop in a couple of suggestions through the session, but mostly, it's going to be for each of us to decide for ourselves how we're best going to support that. So just checking in that the body has what it needs to be well established in this living present experience that we have. And maybe being with the breath or being with sounds, being with the body in some way or being with what's coming and going through space and time. Choosing a meditative object for that intention of paying attention. And as far as the how, maybe that intention we just shared, maybe that can come through in the way we pay attention. So, for example, if that intention was integration, maybe there won't be a rejection of thinking and the less pleasant sensations. Maybe it'll actually be, this is also something I can meet well, something I can soothe with, soften with, brighten with. If our intention is to cultivate joy, can it start with gratitude for this next breath? Appreciation. It's still here. Is it possible to be a bit more present? Is it not maybe always possible to be a bit more present than this? To be more sensitive, to feel, to hear more deeply. To bring more intentionality into this moment, these moments. If we're with the breath, can we be with the whole of the next breath, all of the inhalation, all of the exhalation, with sensitivity, with intentionality, or in the sounds, with the whole flow of sounds, just for a few moments. Whole of this breath, or the whole of these body sensations or sound vibrations. And using the breath as an example. Sometimes we see the breath in a way, we kind of imagine that breath, we feel it, we feel, we imagine where it is. Just noticing where that is in the space of awareness. Or the sounds, you know, where are they happening? Are they out there? Are they in here? Where do we think they are, or imagine they are? Is the breath inside the body? Are the sounds inside the ear? Or are we projecting them out somewhere? It might be helpful just to check if the face is getting tight. It needs or would welcome softening. All the shoulders, anywhere in the body, there's some tension that we could breathe out through or just invite to release, to relax. It can even be helpful to adjust the rhythm of the breathing. It supports steadying, supports well-being. If we're practicing listening or being sensitive to the contact points in the body, whatever practice, is it helpful to have a more delicate attention? Is it helpful to have a more spacious awareness? Are we willing to cultivate well-being? Peace and harmony in a moment like this. Where is the breath if you're not with it? Can you find it again? Does it suddenly just appear? All the sounds. And in a sense, they were always there, waiting to be noticed. The last few minutes again, just inviting yourself to find the way of attending to what's present, inclining towards whatever sense of well-being you can imagine is possible. So that might be the well-being of brightening, enjoying, delighting, energizing perhaps. It could be the well-being of relaxing, releasing, surrendering, softening. You might do that through encouraging that kind of breathing. It might be through encouraging that way of paying attention. Pay attention with softness, or pay attention with brightness. And encourage those qualities to come through. Again, finding the right pace or the right depth of breathing or of listening. It supports the kind of well-being. And again, it's not that we have to jump from zero to well-being, but it's like, can we be more present? And always we can be a little more present. Maybe we can incline a little bit more well-being. And it can be interesting that sometimes we snatch at the well-being, and that can limit it a little bit. If you imagine right now there are actually many, many beings in the world, and it might even delight us to imagine that we could share what little well-being we have with them. Maybe it would be no loss, and it may even be a gain for us. Maybe on the out-breath you can radiate out that well-being to any being. Particular being, if you have someone in mind, or just all beings. Then on the in-breath we can breathe in more well-being, softening or brightening. And on the out-breath, radiating it out. In all directions. behind, above, below, to the sides, in front. Few more breaths, breathing in well-being, sharing out well-being. And we'll begin to transition. And so in transitioning, if you want to keep on you're welcome to. And you can begin to move the body. Open the eyes if they were closed. Returning to the shared space together. So I usually have an idea of what I'm going to share and speak about, and it often kind of comes as a idea bubble or kind of series of bubbles of things together, and sometimes it turns into a phrase, and sometimes the phrase might be better than the rest of it, so I'll give you the phrase first and let you know what it is. And it was, what you imagine you can do. What you imagine you can do. And there's kind of two ways of understanding that sentence. One of them, if you pop a comma after imagine, it becomes a little bit like, I think it was Goethe who said something similar. It's like, what you dream you can do. Like what you imagine you can do. If you can imagine it, you can do it. And also, it's kind of, without that comma, it's quite an interesting phrase. It's like, what do you imagine you can do? And what do you imagine you can't do? You know, what are the limitations that we place on ourselves, and how much does that impact what we end up doing in our life and what we end up experiencing? Yeah, so there's that side. And the other side is kind of, what is not imagined, actually? What is actually not imagined? As we go through this meditation, I use the word, you know, and just imagine the, you know, such and such, and it's like, just imagine that, and then maybe, you know, our experience starts to change. And so, yeah, I want to speak about a little bit of this, and also particularly around the sense of self. And I just want to make it really clear up front before I say a lot more, I am not against the sense of self. You know, I do know that some meditation teachings are a kind of anti-self, pick on the self, this kind of thing. This is more a defense of the self, you know, because, you know, anyway. But before we get into that, one of the things that we can play with our imagination around is actually how we could imagine that we are actually holding up this online Dharma hall together. You know, we are participating in actually holding this up. We can imagine that someone else is supporting this, you know. And actually it's us together who are supporting this to be here. We're supporting it with our presence, you know, we're supporting it with our practice between the sessions, we're supporting it with the way that we listen, the way that we hold the shape, that we, you know, shared our intentions together, that we explored these practices, and you know that we are, you know, the living passing on of these wisdom teachings. Yeah, so you know that's how it is. You know, and we utilize a word dana, which is in many ways related to the word to give, right? But it's like what it is that we're giving. We're actually giving our support. We're actually supporting. And I can't remember if it was in the online Dharma hall or somewhere else where someone used the word contribute, to tribute together. And yeah, I quite like that word because of the word tribute in there. And together we raise up, we push forward, and we encourage the turning of the wheels of Dharma. And in many ways, Gaia House is supporting us to be here, other, you know, beings who come and share teachings and practices and think about what they're going to deliver and all of that side. It's all also really important. But yeah, just firstly want to just really acknowledge the support that you're bringing in your presence. And I hope that these sessions support us to be able to kind of live the life. And, you know, I really enjoyed reading the intentions that you wanted to bring in, and many of them really relate to all of that. So with that said, you know, the dana is there, and we can, you know, tap in and use it to support kind of financially those who come here to share the teachings. You can support me if you wish to. I'm really happy to offer it freely to you also, as is Gaia House. So I'll pop in the chat our websites, Gaia House and my one. My one's at dependentorigination.org and Gaia House at gaiahouse.co.uk. As always, everything's offered without expectations. Yeah, and I know it's sometimes hard to imagine that, but that's one of the parts. And I don't particularly mean that as a weak segue back into, you know, talking about the imagination, but yeah, I just want to let you know that, you know, it's freely offered, but it's also worth just spending a bit of time to talk about that principle. Much more we could say about it, but I hope it's also an element that is supportive for us to know that these are really genuinely freely offered. So what I was thinking in terms of that meditation that we were just doing is, as we practice, we actually see changes in what we attend to. Yeah. Like, start to pay attention with more sensitivity, and sensitivity, you know, shapes how those things appear. You know, at one point I said in the meditation, you know, see if you can find a breath somewhere, right? And then suddenly it's like, oh, it's here it is. And it's like when we start to turn towards it, then the breath appears. When we start to turn over here, we find something else. When we open out to sounds, sounds appear. Yeah? And it's like that's the nature of our experience, right? And so we could say, well, you know, everything is just changing, right? One view is all just changing. This is the truth of anicca. You know, first it's this, and then it's that, and that. Which is a really useful, if kind of, you know, very accessible, and maybe by that nature, it's a little bit simplistic, right? It's just, oh, everything's just changing. And that can lead to a sense of passivity. I've been here and talked about anicca in that way before, and kind of suggested maybe something a little bit more dynamic could be suggested. So, like, another way of viewing it is it's actually changing accordingly, which in the teachings it's often called, dependently originating. If you look for a breath, you find a breath. If you pay attention with sensitivity, the thing becomes more delicate, more refined, more detailed, more subtle, right, in that way. So our way of attending actually affects what appears. Today, I'm going to kind of leap through these things just delicately. I hope that everyone can kind of follow that and just agree. It's like, oh yeah, it changes when we do that. What's really interesting is also how the self-sense changes through that. But how I feel different according to what seems to be what we could say is like the task it feels to undertake. Oh, now there's this subtle breath and I'm becoming more subtle and refined, and that's my job. And that's kind of who I feel myself to be in that way. Yeah. So the task actually dependently originates from the way things seem. Yeah. Not the way they are, the way they seem to us. And all of that speaks to me in how I'm imagining things to be, right? So kind of just to like walk our way back through there. The way I pay attention shapes how things appear. The way things appear also shapes how I pay attention to them, right? And all of that shapes how I feel myself to be, okay? And so because of all of that, we actually see that the sense of self arises dependent on the way things seem, and the way things seem arises dependent on the way the sense of self is actually paying attention to things, right? And so what then do we consciously or unconsciously presume to be the reality of a self that dependently originates? Right? And so many people will say, well, the self is not real. The self isn't real then. There's no real self if it dependently originates. And in a sense, yeah, that's true, right? It's true. We don't need to get into too big an argument. What they're meaning by that is it's not independent, right? It's not objective, right? It's not unaffected. The sense of self is not unaffected by exterior circumstances. Another thing that they mean there is it's not findable separate from what makes it up. Right? You can't find a sense of self separate from the body, sense separate from the mind, separate from the sensations in the body, all the thoughts, feelings, emotions, and things that flow through the mind. Right? And often that kind of you can't find it separate from is actually said after someone's reached the end of a fruitless search to kind of back up the reality statement we presumed for the self, right? So I feel like myself exists. I feel like yourself is listening to this and saying, so I'm unfindable, huh? but this isn't a talk about there is no self, blah, blah, blah. That's really not the point of this talk. It's just to say, it's like, oh, it's not what we thought it was. When we tune in and look. And yet, because of the way that we have these middle way teachings, and you may remember this point that the Buddha was kind of hesitant of doing it because he thought, well, if you start pointing out this stuff, people are going to flip to the other side and say, well, the self does not exist, right? Which is not the teaching of anatta, not the teaching of the not self strategy as a way of looking, right? And yeah, in that moment where we realize the self does not have the kind of reality I was projecting onto it, right, it feels both weird but also quite radically liberating at the same time. As it has that mixture. And if that's so, right, it's like weird, acquired taste, kind of like, that's a bit odd, but also feels quite freeing. Just kind of go with it, see where it leads. It doesn't do most of us any harm to follow that through. And yet, if we take that definition, right, which is it's not independent, it's not unaffected by other things, and it's not findable separate from what makes it up, okay, what by that definition is the reality of anything? What is the reality of anything that is not dividable up into parts which are not that thing? A tree is not the trunk and the branches, it's not the leaves. You know, it's not there and it's not separate from those things. So what really is real? And if that's the case, then why are we drawing so much attention to the self so much times in these teachings? Kind of, I thought to myself, is that, are we a bit like a bully who feels threatened in some way and ends up picking on something that, you know, doesn't really deserve it? You know, let's go after the self again, you know. And of course, there's even that absurdity of, you know, who is the self of the bully who's going around, you know, claiming I have no self? You know, said who? You know, this kind of ongoing joke. You know, there's a good version of it, isn't it? Somewhere in like Zen circle, someone turns around and says, well, look who thinks they're nobody. You know, that kind of thing, you know. And yet, why we might do it is because the more fixed that self-sense is, it's more like an indicator of dukkha, yeah. Okay, so it's like more that becomes a rigid thing, it's good to dissolve it somewhat, right? But then to flip to the other side is actually making a fixed no-self view, right? So a fixed self-view, fixed no-self view, that's not a middle way. And ultimately, of course, it's not that the self even needs to be in that sentence. A fixed view is an indicator of dukkha. A fixed sense of anything is an indicator of dukkha. A fixed sense that this thing really is pleasant or really is unpleasant. All aspects of dukkha. Whatever we are imagining something to be, that's not what it is. That's what we're imagining it to be, right? So maybe a better kind of middle-weighed question is not who we are, or even are we, and are we not, but actually who do we imagine we are? Who do we imagine we are? Right? And with that kind of sharp is that, you know, you can't actually answer these other questions. But who do we imagine we are is a question we can answer, and it is a relevant question to the Dharma. It is a relevant question to the liberation of dukkha. It is a relevant question to the question of freedom. Who am I imagining myself to be? And we could even say, may or may not be true, but like we don't actually get to know to whom the self-image occurs. Yeah? But we do get to shape the image we imagine ourselves to be, yeah, and that is the art of the meditation, right? So let's leave the self on the shelf for a moment and look at something else, like this breath that's occurring now, right? I think everybody can notice there is a breath, or they've noticed a breath in meditation at some time. Now, is the breath real? Is the breath imagined? Oh, let's forget about real. Let's just say, are you imagining this breath or not? And I think you're imagining it. I honestly think you're imagining this breath, and I think I'm imagining my breath as well, right? Have you ever seen an inhalation? Yeah, but you know, there's one, and there'll be another along shortly, I hope. But they don't occur in a moment, right? The breath is a movement, okay? It's a collection of moments. And yet we kind of get to feel this, except attention only exists within one moment, right? There's only one moment at a time of this so-called be in the present moment. A moment can't have movement. If it had movement, it would have a beginning, middle, and end, and it would be a series of moments, right? So it's actually, we're holding the recent past in mind, the present tense, and the future unfolding prediction. Most of the breath is not here in the moment that we pay attention to it. Now we have this inhalation thing, you know, that is actually interesting. So the kind of definition of inward or outward occurring that has that kind of inhalation, exhalation thing means that the breath itself as a movement is an imagination. It's a kind of, it must be like this, you know, here's dear Nathan. He wants to pay attention to an in-breath. Well, probably like this, you know. Oh, here he is. He's completely mindful of his inhalations and his exhalations, but they're actually only occurring in his imaginations. Curious. You know, the very idea then of contact with what really is, you know, is actually dependent on the concept of what we contact. And what we actually contact are perceptions. Even this idea of resting at contact, you know, bare attention, it's not bare. You know, it's not stripped away. It's actually quite, you know, there's imaginations turned up to 11 in a moment of attention. Kind of flooding back into itself with more and more imagination. Ah, now I'm really there, really sensitive, really all of this. And so, you know, we might have a sense of, well, what meditation is about is actually getting out of our imaginations. Yeah. And the really curious step about that is it feels possible, doesn't it? But it's actually an imaginary state, yeah, to be free of imagination. You know, it's like dreaming up a self that knows it is not itself. But then if we take this on board and think, well, this all sounds utterly confusing, which I think it is utterly confusing, right? But that's why the Buddha then comes back and gives us an anchor, you know, gives us a, whatever that rudder, you know, down into the boat so that we can start to steer. And the steering is through the direction of, is there dukkha in the imagination? So we could phrase it as, okay, I need to stop the imagination. How shall I use imagination for the liberation of love, peace, understanding, joy, all those kind of qualities that we shared in the intentions that we started with? And I was listening to a program recently where someone was saying, you know, some of us are creators and some of us are curators. You know, the curator who puts together the exhibition of paintings or whatever, those kind of things, and some of us are kind of painters, maybe some of us are both, and we could use that image in meditation, you know, like creating or cultivating, curating or shaping, yeah, these things, arranging. When we are practicing, it's a kind of experimentation of things. Planting seeds, it's also a kind of a sowing of these things. There's also this crafting element of reflecting, tweaking, adjusting. We need to find our way. You know, we're given these teachings and we have to turn them into practices. And even if we're given practices, you know, we have to make sense of it, bring it into being. And there's that whole creating, curating part of this. It's like, can you imagine what that would be like? And it's like, oh yeah, it is an imagination of what that could be like. When we talk about things like well-being, it's really up to us to decide, well, what's that mean? These whole teachings are pointing beyond the normal conceptual realm of something free, something really free. And yet we kind of imagine what that might be like and then start to practice in ways that support that. And I thought actually of something kind of a fun way of just reflecting, like on this session. You know, I think it's quite interesting. You know, some of us come early to these sessions, you know, it's like we're on time, we're ready to go, 5 minutes to go, I've already tuned in, set up my setup. And many come a little bit late, right? Now, sometimes some of us leave early, right? We have that kind of habit to kind of leave early. You know, it's like, it's interesting how these patterns of behavior show up. And in a really kind of non-judgmental discernment way, we can just kind of ask, is that a pattern for me? Have I imagined myself into a pattern of behavior that I step into? But I'm actually mentioning that more because I think it's interesting to actually see, when do I imagine that the session begins? When do I imagine it begins? Like, does it begin, 5 o'clock UK time? Does it actually begin before? In a way, we may have prepared for today's session, even if we decided late last night not to do one more thing, not to watch one more thing, or not to engage with something more. We wound down really sensitively, dimmed the lights, and in fact today, the mood of today, the intelligence of today, the sensitivity of today is dependent on the generosity of yesterday, right? And tomorrow will be the inheritor, it will be the karmic rebirth of what we decide to do today, what we decide to invest in today. And it's interesting that sometimes we kind of imagine that things begin at a certain point, right? But they're really impacted. How they appear, how they will be, it's really impacted by how we were. So with all this in our imagination, right, where do we go from here? What do we cultivate from here? What is it we want to see more of? What do we imagine we could do? And interestingly, what we imagine we can do gets us pretty close to what we can do. Okay, that's what I wanted to share today, and I'm happy to hear from you how that lands. There's a few teachings or principles that I kind of pointed towards, even if I was not kind of endorsing them wholeheartedly. I still think they're all really great ways to practice, and if they're in any way kind of confusing, I hope I can explain them better, because I really did just kind of say, oh, there's this practice, and it's a mega super highway of ways of practicing, but we're not talking about that right now. I just wanted to give it as an example of something that proves the point around imagination, how it comes into being. But also, while I have your attention, I just wanted to share that, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a really nice course coming up called Gathering in Wellbeing with Sohar that's going to be, I think it's maybe the 8th, it can't be the 18th of May, but maybe it's around the 18th of May that's beginning. And that could be a really nice practice for supporting ourselves into a state of wellbeing. So, noticed there was a few comments in the chat, of people who feel like they're having a tough time right now, and certainly one of the things that it can be hard for us to imagine at any time, but really at particularly tough times, that some well-being, some peace, some ease might be available for us. So I've gathered up the link to that, and you can find it on the Gaia House website. A little more well-being is always possible. So, are there any questions, any comments? Feel free to unmute yourself. Feel free to pop it into the chat. Either way, it's all welcome. It's almost like there's particular ways that we can kind of practice when we feel less than at our kind of full capacity, right? We have to acknowledge is like, I feel really pushed by the conditions that I'm living through and I'm experiencing, and they are hard for me to bear. Now, depending on when and where we kind of started with our practice, different things might be accessible for us, right? It might be possible just to say, some radical things about like, well, okay, that's completely fine, and I don't need this and that, and I can just be, I'm still fine, I'm still well within myself, and all this. If we're kind of picking up our practice from these places, though, it can be really sensible to try and be more gentle in the progress that we anticipate making. Yeah. So if we take just a phrase that I semi-spontaneously, brought into the meditation, which was, "Could you be a little bit more present?" Now, oftentimes we will talk about, "Let's get present," right? In as if there's kind of like on-off presence, right? But actually, the question is only, "Can I be a bit more present?" Right? Now, when you say that, that might be enough, and that might be like, "Wow, I really feel fully present." And now I feel like that's like 100% present. I've never been this present in my life before. I can't recall a moment of more presence. Da, 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 da. But then still, that question applies. Can you be a bit more present? It's like, "Oh, yeah, I could. I realized I was holding myself back from being more present." And so you can take that same thing, is like, take anything that you want to be more peaceful, more connected, more joyful, more anything, and just question for yourself, could I turn that dial the smallest amount? Yeah, I can. I can. I can soften. I can brighten. I can appreciate. I can whatever, right? So rather than setting the goal too far away and thinking I have to flip from zero to one, it's much more a question of, can I just have a bit more of that? For me, I think that's a really nice way to practice. It's much more respectful of myself, So if we take that same example around with self, as you brought the self in as an example, so I don't think you need to give up that self, but just to kind of say, could I soften that a little bit? Yeah, could I open that a little bit? Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you so much. Lovely. Yeah. So I think, yeah, I think your questioning and everything actually kind of opens out a lot more kind of dimensions around things that we could talk about. So yeah, two kind of key aspects which you've flagged up is the difference between saying that the imagination is engaged in perception, in conception, and also kind of making that distinction from that to something being, kind of, we could say, kind of entirely imaginary. So something that's entirely imaginary would be like a dream, that we don't think that that's really happening. Now, you could have, and some spiritual teachings kind of lean on that and say, all of this is actually just another dream. And part of that is that kind of metaphor of waking up, is waking up to the fact that it's all just a dream. So yeah, that's not what I'm saying. I am saying that our imagination is actually implicit in any moment of perception, any moment of consciousness. That it's an imagination of the world, and that means that there's actually a lot more possibilities of shaping that experience. But that's not separate from the harms that could be happening in the world, right? And there are things that we need to challenge, and not just say, "Oh well, all of that abuse and corruption and whatever, that's also just in my imagination." Therefore, so I really think that, that kind of second point that you were bringing in, which is that the foundation is ethics, is absolutely true, and I think I'm fully wholeheartedly on board with that. That the foundation, and I think also the culmination of our practice is ethics. That we need to practice an ethical existence, otherwise our practice is just going to be a hell realm for us, just full of regret, shame, all of those kind of negative emotions, because we haven't actually, tidied up our act, as Lee Bracington puts it. But also, why would we want to do this practice? So that we could actually be a more loving, wise, compassionate presence in the world, right? So it has to be also the culmination of our practice. The outcome and the inflow are basically have this kind of reciprocal relationship. But as we journey there, our imagination of who we think we are and what we think the world is really kind of up in possibilities. It's not kind of up for grabs, but it's like really rich with possibilities. Like, do I, for example, imagine that the world is sacred or not? Do I imagine that I have the possibility to change things? That a kind word, do I imagine that a kind word in this place is going to be, adding a few more molecules of matter, and that really might make a difference? Or do I think, oh, it doesn't really matter what I do? Right, and those imaginations, those kind of imaginations, I think are radically different, So that's more the kind of point that I wanted to make. The ultimate ontological reality of things, I don't know. So is it all ultimately imaginary? Maybe, but I don't think that's a useful way of imagining these things. I think it's better to aim for a middle way on those elements. So I hope that responds and clarifies. If you have anything more to add, feel free to. Hello. Yeah, beautiful. And thank you both for picking up the piece of rubbish by the lake, and because it's surprisingly tempting to just be ignore that, just be absolutely irritated that that's there and then walk away, and it's kind of the, well, whatever, it sets it up for another person to experience that annoyance, right? And the next person might not be able to work with it as skillfully as you did, which was actually to transform it, right? And also participate in shaping the world for the next person. It's like, there are numerous more beings that we can imagine are now benefiting from that. The insects that are not going to get, or the lizard maybe, or whatever, that's not going to get stuck in the can and, seeking out some sweetness that it wouldn't serve it very well, or all of that. Or the next human being that's going to see that in those aspects. But also the one imagination that I really love in this, and I've, I think mentioned it with you before, is that sense of the Susan that I imagined myself to be that left the can there, and that sense of myself that I found through, yeah, I am the kind of being that's willing to pick this stuff up, And that's really radical. That's really effective and creates a lot of well-being for ourselves, while also we're creating a lot of well-being for others. Thank you. So there's a question in the chat. So from Alison, so using your example of the breath, are you suggesting that my experience or my perception of the body breathing is influenced and coloured by my imagination? How I am imagining it rather than the breath being a figment of my imagination, e.g., not actually happening? I hope that makes sense. Yeah. So, yes, great question, and kind of similar in a way to Ashley's point before, this kind of differentiation between, that we are kind of ontologically taking a stance that because the breath cannot actually be in that present moment a breath, someone much more skilled in the kind of analytics of this thing, someone like Nagarjuna, if you want to check out the explorations of emptiness in those ways, is kind of saying that, for example, a moment of walking doesn't exist. Because walking is this process movement through time, and if there's only moments, then it can't happen in a moment, can it? There can't be that movement. If there's movement, it's not a moment. It's a collection of moments, and a collection of moments can't exist in one moment. So therefore walking doesn't exist. But what they mean by that is, like, it doesn't ultimately exist, And as someone's mentioning, kind of Zeno with their paradoxes, the arrow that's always halfway there never arrives, and it does arrive, So it's like, what we're questioning there is our conceptions of reality. And it can be really helpful to do that at a certain point in our practice. when that is perhaps slightly out of the scope of this session, but like where it's causing dukkha is the kind of answer. So what we're suggesting with that example around the breath was actually more like a counterexample, is that people often will pick on something like the self and say, well, the self doesn't really exist because it doesn't have these kind of things. And yet, we should just be with our breath and get rid of the self. It's like, well, the breath also doesn't exist, right? By those same definitions. What's important here is actually the liberation of what that opens. What is the breath then, right? Because if you are fixed within this idea that my practice is to mindfully be with each and every breath, okay, well, great. But I'm not going to change them from how they are. I'm just going to observe them as if they have their own entity and their own existence from their own side. It doesn't. It doesn't. So, kind of owning up to that, now, how should we breathe? And the question then is around this inquiry that I was bringing in into the meditation, which is, how could you bring more well-being right now? And if the answer to that question, and many times it is, maybe I'll breathe in and out through the soles of my feet, maybe I'll breathe in and out of my elbows. And it's like, you can't do that. Well, I could imagine I'm doing it. Would that be okay? Yes, it would be completely okay. I'm going to imagine that the breath is coming into my heart, softening my heart, opening my heart, melting my heart, melting the barriers that I've put up around my heart. Yeah. And I'm going to breathe out bright, warmth, loving embrace into the world. Is that really happening? Who cares? It was all imagined anyway. Now I'm breathing that way. Do I feel better? A lot better. Is that okay? Is that reducing dukkha? Yes. Okay. You're on the right mark. Right? So it's this to say, yes, it's definitely, definitely influenced by my imagination. Is it completely imaginary? I don't know. You don't get to know, right? You can't. It's the same thing as saying, well, the self doesn't exist, and I will fight to the death. It's like, oh, come on, you can't take a side on this. It's like this argument about free will. It's like, well, is there free will? Is there not free will? It's like, if it's been going on this long, it's probably not answerable, is it? But the question always in these teachings is there a way of utilizing our depth of understanding of experience to liberate more dukkha? And that's the invitation, right? That's the invitation. So there's another good question in the chat there. But ethics are a concept too, and well-being and dukkha. And yeah, absolutely, absolutely, they are all concepts. I don't think that we can be outside of concepts for as long as we are within what we might call perception experience. So in Alison's question, I think very skillfully, correlated experience and perception together. For as long as there's experience, there will be a perception. For as long as there's a perception, there is a conception. Right? Conceptions precede perceptions. Perceptions are our experience. Seems kind of absurd in a way. And so, ethics, they're dynamic, right? Well-being, it's dynamic. Dukkha, it's also dynamic. And they are shaped concepts that evolve along with us. What we used to think was ethical, someone might point out to us, have you heard about this thing, free range meat or whatever? And like, wow, no, I hadn't thought about that. And, oh, right, so that's where we have to step up to. And then someone says, yeah, but have you thought it's actually possible to survive without, putting anything in a cage? You could just get by on vegetables or such and such. And it's like, and then continuously, these ethics that we thought were, a fixed thing, it's like they're much more dynamic. And what we now agree is unthinkable used to be entirely thinkable. Yeah, so definitely they are. But what we probably want to be alive and awake to within that kind of a framework, which is whatever I think now is ethical, could be more ethical. And what is that for me? What is the next? You know, what? How can I utilize my imagination to include the well-being of more beings, future beings that I'm maybe not thinking of, or insect beings that I don't normally bring into consideration? Okay, so thank you for allowing me to exist in your imagination for this period of time, and even though I believe I exist in other realms than just your imagination, which I also do about all of you and about all of this existence, yeah, I think it's helpful to feel that reality is really something, and yet also there's much more that we could imagine, that we could be, that this could be. And I hope that this is in some way supportive of that. Okay, so take care, and feel free to unmute and say thank you and goodbye to each other. And hope to see you in a future session.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.